You are looking live at Chicken Dinner.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
I think I'll take two chickens.
Go on riverboat gambling trips.
You're going to die for some chickens.
Hey, what's your chicken dinner?
Someone is.
It was feathers yesterday. There was no chicken.
What you got riding on this game?
My daughter.
What a gambler.
It's Chicken Dinner.
Hey, Babalugas, we got a bet here.
Here's your host, Sam Panionovich.
It's called Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner right there, boys.
Let's get this thing going.
Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner. How about that?
Away we go. Chicken Dinner Friday, August 27th, 2021. Follow us on Twitter at ChickenXDinner, Instagram at ChickenDinnerSP, and subscribe to this podcast so you get it once it drops. We will talk to Matt Metcalf, Circa Sports, taking big bets at big time limits. Matt's booking strategy, his past as a pro sports bettor, taking advantage of those bad NASCAR numbers back in the day, and the impact Derek Stevens has had on Matt's life. So a lot to get to with Matt Metcalf coming up later on in the show. I'm getting excited. Also, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't a little nervous. First full football season working at NESN and Fox. No pressure, no pressure, no pressure. I keep reiterating that to myself. That said, I've already read a message like this the other day in the DMs. Hey, Sam, the Nebraska-Illinois total hasn't gone down yet. Something up? Question mark? I'll take that as a compliment, I guess, because people expect us to get the best number, and that's fine and dandy. This was also a message like 12 hours after we made the pick. Please, please be patient. By the way, market down from 55. 54 and a half at South Point, Will Hill, Bet Online, Heritage, Pinnacle, 54, Circa, and Westgate. So, trending in the right direction. It's still week zero, though. I could be way off. There could be 90 points in this game. It's one pick in the first weekend of college football. I feel good about under 55, but it's not a lock. There's no such thing. Over the first 2 weeks of college football, think about it this way. You'll see sports books get a lot of these games wrong. That's mostly because there's too much of a reliance at a lot of places on past results instead of the present and the future. What happened, not what will happen. And I'm talking from last season to this season. Bookies can't possibly know the ins and outs of all these teams. Impossible going into week zero, week one, whatever. Now, adjustments will definitely be made, but if you find the right team or two or three, you'll make some money. I still don't want you to get crazy in week zero, which I still don't know what that is. There's five FBS games, and some of you are going to bet all five or parlay all five. Wheel them! I repeat, you don't have to get crazy, and I would hope that you don't. We actually missed the one-year anniversary of Chicken Dinner coming back in August of 2020. The 24th is when I brought it back after a long time off, had to wait out the rest of that VEASAN contract, and jumped right into that show, Chicken Dinner. Brought it back actually 5 days a week in August of 2020. What a ride it's been since that day. Whew. I turned the clock back to late August, last September, October, November. I was writing three stories a day with NBC, video for Roto World, and taping Chicken Dinner every single day. Writing, taping, editing, posting, all that. Sitting in that maroon leather chair in my bedroom apartment in Bridgeport, 10, 11 hours a day. And if I was lucky, the Wi-Fi signal was semi-strong. Those were the days. Oh, I used to get those emails. Hey, we only got two of your columns today. I write five columns a week now for NESN. 15 stories a week. Five podcasts a week. I didn't leave my house. Good old 31st and Wells. I slept there. I woke up, showered, and worked all day. Rinse, repeat, Monday through Friday. Not trying to complain. It's just that was what I was doing at the time to try and get back out. And I'm so fortunate that we have the following that we have and to be able to work for companies like NESN and Fox. They understand it. They get it. But it's been a hell of a year in a lot of ways for a lot of people. I'm just grateful that we could still do a show like this at this point, twice a week, might have 2-3 a week coming football season. It all depends. But there's a lot going on. And as Massachusetts gets closer and closer to figuring out this sports betting, we're going to have a lot of cool stuff. A lot of stuff is going on behind the scenes. But happy 1 year to us. Coming back August 24th, 2020. Hopefully we keep this thing rolling. All right, I'm cutting down my survivor list for NFL Week 1. So far, my favorite, Vikings over the Bengals. And these are games, a lot of them I don't like. It's been common for a lot of people over the years to just take the biggest favorite on the board or a team that's laying 7 or 8 or so and just lock that team in. Problem is, when it backfires, like Week 1 on me last year, Indianapolis over Jacksonville, Colts were -8.5 or -9, I think. And that was 40% of the Circa Survivor, I think. Jacksonville wins, they don't win again. So I don't really like the biggest favorite on the board. I'd like to avoid that avalanche. Because if I'm on the biggest favorite and it goes down, I'm out, obviously. But if I can just find another one and avoid that potential landmine. See, maybe I'm just jaded now. I don't know. Either way, I like Minnesota. Spread is 3.5, open 3. I'm high on Minnesota. You guys know that. And I'm not as high on Cincinnati, and Joe Burrow hasn't played in a long time. So Minnesota for me is on the 1 line. What else? Let's go down the schedule. Thursday night, Dallas at Tampa. Tampa opened 6, now it's 8. Tampa's going to be the most popular play of the week, probably. If Dak's healthy, hey, they could beat Tampa. I don't know, though. I don't like Tampa because it's Thursday night. We've seen defending champs come in, air out of their lungs, lose the game. They're busy walking around with the trophy, rings, whatever. I'm good on Thursday games. Historically, I don't like Thursday or Monday night games. I just don't. Pittsburgh-Buffalo. I like Pittsburgh with the point, so I'm not taking Buffalo. Jets at Carolina, Same with Jacksonville at Houston. If you pick that game, you're fucking bold. Jacksonville -3 at Houston. Arizona-Tennessee, Titans -3 at home. Chargers-Washington, that's a pick 'em. Philly at Atlanta, 3.5. Falcons, A lot of these games I don't like. The other one that's going to be really popular, San Francisco-Detroit. Niners laying 7.5 on the road. You know how I feel about those 7.5 numbers that open 7.5. Usually I lean to the favorite here. Well, I get the hook. More times than not, I've found when I'm on that favorite -7.5, it's a pretty good bet. Everybody's going to be on San Francisco, though. Those would be the two so far, Tampa and San Fran. Detroit's going to suck this year. Cleveland, KC, pass. Miami, New England, pass. Denver, Giants, pass. Green Bay, New Orleans, pass. A lot of people will be on Green Bay there. Chicago, LA, Rams. That's another one. Sunday night. Rams open 7. At all the Illinois books, it's 7 for the most part. 7.5 in a lot of the Vegas books. Despite having, a good amount of tickets on Chicago. So that's another one I thought about. Vikings, Buccaneers, 49ers, Rams. I'm going to whittle it down from there, but a lot of these games, the lines are close. They are. So that's where I'm at with a couple weeks to go for the Survivor pools. A lot of you are in Survivor pools. It doesn't have to be a big one for a lot of money. Some of these are $50, $100, and the pot's like $7,000, $8,000 if you find the right pool. But I'm leaning Minnesota, and I don't like to go away from my gut a lot. Not the biggest number in the world, -3.5 on the road, but I like the way Minnesota matches up with that Cincy defense. That Bengals defense is awful. And good luck stopping Dalvin Cook, Adam Thielen, Justin Jefferson, D.D. Westbrook. Good luck. Irv Smith. A lot could go wrong there. A lot could go wrong. I got a phone call from Vegas Rick the other day, and he got my wheels spinning on this one. Jameis Winston, the passing leader prop. Jameis to lead the NFL in passing yards. 30-1. Hold on, before you fast forward. In 2019 with Tampa, that was Jameis's famous 30-30 season, 30 tutties, 30 picks. He threw for 5,100 yards, and he couldn't even see. That was when he found out in the offseason. He's like, hey, I need LASIK eye surgery. 5,100 yards. So we know he's capable of putting up yards, and we know that he can actually throw the ball 30 yards, unlike Drew Brees. But when you think about New Orleans, don't think about what they've been in the last 3 or 4 years of Brees' career. It's been a different offense. They had Kamara and Mark Ingram, but Brees also couldn't throw the deep ball anymore, at least. Not that he was ever a great deep ball thrower as it was. In 2015, though, let's go back to that season. Sean Payton calling the shots. Same offense, different guys, same system, though. A lot of these guys are the same. You go back in that 2015 season, Brees led the league in passing, 4,970 yards. So it can be done in this offense. Even though they've ran more lately, that's been by design because Brees can't throw. Winston's got this team. They'll bring in Taysom Hill for different things, but Winston's going to be the guy. And when you think about a number of 30-1, combine that with the 8 games you get indoors at the Caesars Superdome, which still sounds so funny to say out loud. You got speed all over the roster, plus a guy like Kamara as a weapon out of the backfield. I'm talking the passing game. He's an extension of that running game. And Kamara, last couple years, receiving yards, 756, 533, 709, 826. They've got a lot of weapons. They need a quarterback that can make a strong throw or can make the rainbow 40, 50 yards, hit the deep threat, open up the defense. Brees is dinking and dunking all over the field. Now, I'm not saying that Winston is better than Brees. Obviously, Brees, one of the best to ever do it. But when it comes to the present day, 2021, who's a better quarterback? Who's got more talent? Who's got a bigger arm? Jameis Winston. And I don't think they're going to be ahead as much as they were in years past. So that would unleash Jameis and make him throw more. $100 wins you $3,000. Do I like it at 15-1? No. 30-1? How much can you take? Importance of the number. I don't like it at 10-1. 15, 20, 25, 30? That's enough to wet my beak. 500 wins a lot of money. Not saying that I'm willing to burn 500 on Jameis Winston, but, you know, 100 to win 3,000? I've made worse bets. That's an offense that could hum with a quarterback that could unleash a lot of their speed and a lot of their routes. That offense will look a lot different this year. I don't know if he's the leading passer, but there are certainly worse bets on the board. I got a message from one of my guys, Matty D. He hit me up with the following thoughts. Hey, Sam, it's been a minute since we chatted. Just a quick question. Why is Max Scherzer such a long shot for Cy Young at this point? Matty adds, Scherzer, 20-1 is great value. In that park with that Dodgers team, he's already first in whip, second in Ks per nine behind Burns, and sixth in ERA. If he finishes strong, he's got a shot. And then, of course, Matty, very sharp guy. He's made a lot of great future bets, and he likes to cash out. He'll take a guy 40-1, cash him out 5-1. Take a guy 20-1, cash him out 4-1, whatever. He talks about the cash out potential at DraftKings because they can cash you out at a plus price, Matty says. So I did a little digging. Since getting traded to the Dodgers, Scherzer 3-0 with a 2.11 ERA and a whip under 1. 31 strikeouts, 4 walks, 5 earned in 21 innings, 13 strikeouts per 9. Whew, is he throwing smoke. Now you look at the guys that are in the conversation. I pulled up Odds Boom, went to NL Cy Young. Walker Buehler is the favorite. Plus 100, minus 10, minus 20, depending on where you shop. So about even money on Buehler. Burns about 250. Zach Wheeler, anywhere from 5-1 to 750. Woodruff, 7, 8, 9-1. Then Scherzer. I don't know that Max can win the award, but Maddie is on to something here. If Scherzer has a tremendous September and makes five more starts, goes 5-0, keeps up these numbers, whip keeps dropping, strikeouts keep rising, Dodgers keep winning, you could see guys fall out of favor. Wheeler and Woodruff have a couple bad starts. Their number goes up. Scherzer goes from 20-1 to 10-1. Burns has a blow up, gives up a grand slam, falls off the map. I've seen stranger things. Now, this is not me sitting here saying, well, hey, Scherzer's going to win the Cy Young. But if you do have the cash out option, and some books have this, DK has it, PointsBet has it. If he's in, you know, clear second place with 2 weeks or a week to go, and the market is 4-5-1, you just take that 20-1 ticket and cash it out. Take the money and run. I don't hate that one bit. And I appreciate Matt reaching out with that call. Scherzer's been good this year. And that's a guy who's locked in. He even yelled at his manager the other day for touching him during a start. Don't touch me. That guy's wired all the time. And the last thing before we get to Matt Metcalf, Circus Sports, I wanted to bring this to your attention. I don't know if you've seen this yet, but it's worth reading. My old co-host at VSiN and one of my old drinking buddies in Las Vegas, Matt Eumanns, the beast, as they call him. This guy lives on alcohol and and fast food, really. And he'll tell you that if you meet him or if you know him. Fast food once, twice a day. And on the weekends, I just saw him at the Oasis. Oh, my God. I don't know how the guy is still standing sometimes with the things that he puts in that body. He really is a beast. He actually went and did a fast food top 50 power rankings. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Here's the lead to the story. A tantalizing fragrance wafted from the kitchen Sunday night as my wife walked into the hallway and announced the Chilean sea bass and lobster ravioli were ready for dinner. She pulled the fine china out of the cupboard and lit candles to enhance the atmosphere. Eumanns continues, okay, let's get real. The paragraph you just read is fiction. No scene of that sort has happened in my life, and it's not even a dream scenario. No wife, no plates, no silverware, no homemade meals, and that's great. This was reality Saturday night, Eumanns adds. While sweating out the day's final NFL preseason bet, I drove a few blocks to KFC and ordered a two-piece meal in the drive-thru line while checking score updates on the phone. It's football season. Fast food and sports handicapping are my top priorities. And then he takes you on a hilarious ride through his top 50 fast food power rankings. Thorough stuff. I was surprised who number one was. I'm not going to spoil the list. I wanted to give you the lead, read that, and see if you're hooked yet. Just a great list. And some of these places I've never even been to. Like the place, number 9, never been there. Never even heard of it. Number 10, disagree with. And you'll have your disagreements too. But this is not some operation that took him a couple hours. This looks like it took 2 or 3 weeks to write this list. You get the list, and then you get a paragraph on every place. And for those of us that gamble, oftentimes, we order fast food. We order the pizza and the wings. Now, Matt is more of a drive-and-go-get-it between games, and that's fine. But as gamblers, we're not cooking 4 or 5-course meals on a college football Saturday or an NFL Sunday. We like to eat a bunch of garbage and drink and watch football. And this is a very relatable article because I've been to a lot of these places, but nobody knows fast food like Matt Eumanns. Nobody. Nobody in the world has eaten more. He actually estimated that he has eaten, let me find it. Well, he said with more than 45 years of experience in the fast food arena, he's the guy. So it's a good way to put it. Good way to put it. If I could eat at only one franchise every day for the rest of my years, it would be Denny's, but America's Diner has no drive-thru window and the sit-down atmosphere dictates it does not qualify for the fast food rankings. You get it. You get the point. As we get ready for football and go through our own power ratings and put this team here and this team there, I think this is a fun read as we prepare for the madness. Just go Google Matt Youmans top 50. It's the top result on Google. Youmans. You will not regret it.
Chicken Dinner is on the road. This is the last stop before we head back to Boston. And this is where Circa Sports essentially started. Sportsbook director Matt Metcalf in the house. I met you 3 years ago. We're sitting at the Long Bar, and you're like, ooh, I've been betting. I've been playing. I love what I do, but I'm thinking about getting back in. I'm jumping back into the pool potentially. You were like, you were back and forth on it, weren't you?
Yeah, I think at the point you met me, and we talked about this a little before, but I was on the fence of like, did I make the right decision? Because I had come into an environment where we were opening a sports book, but it was a year away when I took the job. And so I really was second guessing myself because my day looked, you know, pretty much like a corporate, like executive. I was going to meetings. I was doing phone calls. I mean, this is pre-pandemic, pre-Zoom. So no Zoom meetings yet, but a lot of that stuff. And I didn't really know what I was doing. I had never worked in that type of environment. I'd really only worked in a book at the Superbook and bet on my own. So yeah, I was really struggling. I had no clue what I was doing. I was trying to pretend like I did. I think Derek bought it. I think he thought I knew what I was doing and that I wasn't, like, you know, making a mess of things. But yeah, it was a rough time, I guess, until we opened the book.
Your path has been very interesting, you know, counter, better, back behind the counter. It's just you've really done a good job of spinning this thing and really putting all this stuff together. It's really helped you, though, I would think, because, you know, this is a book. You guys gamble. You really do behind the counter. You guys are taking bets. So it's really like a hybrid situation where Circa is a bookmaker, but you guys fucking gamble back there.
Yeah, I want to say that I planned this path of coming out to Vegas, working at a sports book, becoming a pro sports bettor for like 8 years, and then coming back to kind of put the two together. But when I moved out here in 2003, I think, and took a job at the Imperial Palace, the last thing I thought was possible was to win money betting on sports. I was convinced that, you know, I want to come out here, I want to run as big a book as I can, I want to take big bets, but, you know, being a professional sports bettor was not an option to me. I just didn't think people could win on sports. And kind of in that process of working at the IP, I was able to kind of see, you know, these wise guys come in and understand that, no, there's actually guys out there who can make a living doing this. And so, yeah, it's been a cool ride, though.
Were you under the Cornegay tree?
Yeah, so I actually wrote, I want to say I wrote three letters when I was, after I graduated college, it's probably like summer of 2002 or fall 2002. I wrote a letter to Joe Lupo at Stardust. He was the sportsbook manager there at the time. I wrote a letter to Roxy Roxborough, and he was at LVSC. But I didn't know he wasn't there anymore. And I think I've told the story probably before, but I wrote a third letter to Jay Cornegay. He was the only one who wrote me back and pretty much said, hey, you know, I'm not going to hire you from 3,000 miles away, but if you come out here and you know, apply, like, I'll give you an interview and we'll see what we got. So,
and that's it, from a letter.
Yeah. And I didn't think it would be that easy. I kind of jumped at the chance when Jay said that and thinking, you know, well, he's going to be surprised when I show up on his doorstep. And I did that. And then over there, I met Ed Sammons.
Oh, man, the king of the NFL.
Yeah, who I had no clue he even existed. It's an ongoing debate between him and Murray, I know. But I had no clue Ed Sammons even existed. You know, met him and then got lucky. Him and Jay moved over with Jeff Sherman to the Hilton, and I followed them along. So,
well, if I didn't learn from all these other people ahead of me, like how this guy wrote his sportscast, how this guy would cut his highlights, you're making something and you throw it in the oven and it's going to take time, but you really have to like stack those experiences and you take what you have to, but you also have to be yourself. Like it's a weird way, the way we grow as humans, but you had great people that helped you out.
My dad gave me this book when I was a kid, probably like when I graduated college. It was called Road Trip Nation. And it was kind of like a cheesy book, but it had interviews with like 40 people in it. And basically it told, like, you know, how these people kind of moved through their careers. And they were all like established people. They were all probably like between 40 and 60 at the time they were doing these interviews. And they're basically saying, like, the message of the book was the path is never linear. And like, you take these experiences, you kind of just trust your gut and you go along. And I remember reading that book and thinking, like, you know, how else am I going to get to being a bookie in Vegas? I just got to kind of go for it. And so it's awesome to think back on that book and then look at kind of my path and just be like, you know, and not that I'm as successful as the people in that book, but, you know, to kind of see how things played out and working under people like, you know, Jay and Jeff Sherman and that Sam's, how lucky I was to do that and learn from them. And then being able to bet for 8 years and make money and kind of everything I learned from betting that I brought back with me to this side. Yeah. I think it's the main reason that we've resonated, you know, what we're doing here has resonated so much. So.
There's nobody else in town like you. I'll say that for you. There's nobody else in town like you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I'm sure there's a lot of people with betting experience that I respect in the industry, but I don't know if anybody has the exact same path. So
you meet Derek Stevens.
Yeah.
What's the initial reaction there? Like, what did you think of Derek when you first met him?
I didn't know a ton about him. I had heard his name probably for like 3 or 4 years in articles and stuff. And so, you know, when I got this opportunity to sit down and meet him, I did some research and I was like, oh, this guy's doing stuff. And I love downtown. I was always a big fan of downtown. So, you know, we got in the meeting and I don't think he knew what to expect from me. I think somebody had recommended me and we hit it off pretty quick. I had a pretty tight vision of what I wanted to do. And we really bonded over, I would say, customer service. The fact that we both are, you know, believe in treating customers the right way and giving them value. And then we also just bonded over like Vegas history and love of Vegas. And I think those two things, you know, really cemented our relationship. And then the sports betting thing was almost like, you know, an extra, like an icing on the cake kind of deal.
Really? So it actually started with the love affair for Las Vegas.
I think so. He might have a different story than that, but that's where I kind of think it started. Yeah.
I'll ask him next year. I'm moving up. I went from Van Erman to Metcalf. I'll get to Stevens maybe next summer.
I'm a good stepping stone.
Yeah, you're going to be my middleman. What do you miss about the day-to-day betting stuff? Is there anything that you do miss?
Yeah, I miss having total control over my day, and I miss being able to plan out my day the way I want and not have to depend on anybody else. It's nice to wake up like, okay, I'm going to wake up at 8. I'm going to go to the gym from 8 to 10. I'm going to eat some breakfast from 10 to 11. I'm going to like go to a movie at 1, and then I'm going to work from like, you know, 3 p.m. to 11 p.m. Like it just was so nice for me to like, you know, I guess maybe it's people are different. I feel like I have more kind of an entrepreneurial kind of like slant on how I want to live my life sometimes. So it's a different scenario now. It's, you know, people are depending on me and I have to be here at certain hours and, you know, give direction and it's just different. And I think I've learned so much of this opportunity. It's made me just a better overall person and manager and like everything. So it's very different, but I do miss the freedom of being a sports bettor. It's nice.
The day-to-day grind for a gambler, man, it's so hard. And, you know, I moved out here. It wasn't easy. I wasn't making a lot of money to begin with, but that was my biggest problem. I was hanging around guys that won and guys that built houses and stuff like that. And you see their stuff, and it's like, yeah, but they're disciplined, and they're not firing random shit, and they're not making tequila bets. You know, like you wake up the next morning like, oh, my God, I bet this last night. The discipline it takes, back to what you said earlier, to win, it's so hard to win. It's so hard to win.
Yeah, I think that one of my main strengths as a bettor was probably deciding, you know, money management to a degree, deciding how much to bet on something, when it was appropriate to risk, you know, more than my normal unit. I thought I was really good at structuring bets and kind of like interpreting other people's information into what the appropriate play was or the appropriate amount of the play was. The thing I will say was I questioned a lot of times whether I was like emotionally built to be a sports bettor, because I'm kind of an emotionally reactive person to begin with. I kind of like, you know, I internalize a lot of emotion and I kind of just react. And so a lot of times I felt like it was tough because the longer I was a sports bettor, you know, the better I felt like I was at this. The market got better every year. And so I felt like my results didn't really like, you know, necessarily reflect how good I thought I was, because, you know, when I started betting sports back in the mid 2000s, you know, kind of at a more serious level, there was a lot of weak markets and I wasn't that good, I didn't think, but I was making decent money. And, you know, it just, by 2014, 15, I was like, I'm good enough at this as I've ever been. I'm at my, like my peak or whatever. And it was just harder to win by that time. And so I think I got worse at dealing with the losses and the swings the older I got. I know I put my wife probably through a ton of stuff just in terms of, it takes me like, usually if I lose, you know, let's say, for example, NASCAR race, if I have a bad NASCAR race and that ends at 3 p.m., it takes me the rest of the day to process that loss. And then, you know, I do my books and my accounting. And by the next morning when I wake up, I'm done with it. But for the next 8 hours or 9 hours that I'm up that day, I'm not probably a good person to be around.
I was talking to a couple guys about centralizing your strengths when it comes to betting, and your name comes up with Zach White and DeRosa when it comes to NASCAR. They said you guys just killed NASCAR. You found that niche. Was it the head-to-head matchups that you played? Did you play a lot of those too?
Yeah, we played a lot of odds to win, but honestly, you know, speaking of DeRosa and Zach White, you know, we made each other better. I mean, 100%. Like, yep. I had the free run of the town probably till 2006 when those guys showed up. And I can remember seeing Zach at the Mirage one day. And normally I just stroll in, grab a sheet, go, oh, okay, Carl Edwards at 25-1. That's a horrific number. I'm going to go see what they'll take on this. And I think that day, I don't even know, you know, what race it was, but I saw Zach walking away from the counter. And just something in me was like, I feel like that kid just made a bet that, like, I was going to make. And I went up there, and sure enough, the price had moved. And then I think I went to, like, Bally's or somewhere else, and I see him again. And I'm just like,
just starts
okay.
Popping up.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, this is, like, things have just changed. I have competition. And so, you know, it forced me to be more kind of proactive and take it more seriously. And honestly, at some point, you know, we both probably sharpened the market, and then it just made the numbers better, so we both had to get better. I mean, and I think we both did. I think we probably had our – you know, I had way more successful years down the line, you know, 2011, 12, 13, 14, than I had in the mid-2000s when my edge was probably way bigger, you know.
I'm picturing you guys just seeing each other, and then, like, you're both dead heat in the parking lot, and then one of you is going to sprint and win the race to the window.
Yeah, and I'll give it to him. He was better than me, I felt like. You know, granted, I was working a full-time job at the time when I was really starting to understand who he was, so... You know, I'm putting 8 hours here and going in on breaks and stuff. So I guess I had some excuse, but Zach was good.
Sherrapin said you guys just cleaned up. I think he told me that one night, and I was like, really? NASCAR? But it all comes full circle now, because you're talking about, you know, getting the numbers that are bloated, right? The numbers that are raw for whatever. And now you take that full circle, because now your numbers got to be tight. So it all comes full circle, because your guys' numbers, they're tight.
Without the NASCAR, you know, that was kind of my gateway to that sports betting was even possible to make money. You know, I wouldn't have known that, you know, whatever. There's guys there who I obviously know. When Billy's guys are betting, you know he's making money. But I wouldn't have thought it was possible for somebody like me to make money sports betting until I kind of found a soft market like NASCAR and was like, okay, this is like an information game. And it sounds dumb, but at the time, you know, I just didn't. I was thinking, like, you know, the way you handicap a football game is, you know, X's and O's, and you're looking at, you know, stats, and like, that is part of it.
Sure.
But there's a lot of information that goes into sports betting, and that's probably even a bigger chunk of it than, you know, a lot of these models that people are running. So
how much of your pie is made up of numbers? Like, if I was going to say, all right, like, when it comes to your market, right, like, how much of it is power ratings, numbers, and then, you know, like, how much is feel on the other end?
I mean, I think it all starts with ratings. You know, I'm not somebody who's, I wouldn't consider myself like a quant. I'm not like model based at all. You know, I have power ratings, and I have like very like rough around the edges programs that I've built with my limited knowledge of Excel and stuff. So yeah. There's, you know, I almost don't feel like I have the right to have conversations with some of these guys who are just on another level for me and running, you know, models and simulations. But I think there's still space for old school guys in certain markets who are kind of doing it the way I am, and just immersing yourself in the market. And that's what it takes. I mean, when I bet college football and had some success, it was really just total immersion and sort of in kind of just putting yourself in Twitter and putting yourself on, you know, the blog boards and the message boards, and, you know, reading everything you can, and just, you know, basically just knowing your numbers so cold that you can kind of make and tweak these little adjustments a little on feel and just kind of have an idea where these numbers should be. But it's gotten harder and harder over the years. I think these markets are just tighter than they've ever been. So.
Oh, man, I know. In most places, not like Circa, but at most places, even when you beat the numbers, then you can't get down either. I mean, it's so hard. And I got buddies that they still play with locals because the locals are taking their bets, and some of the books, they're not taking a bet.
Yeah, I think that my thought is, like, my ambitions are to take bets on such a high level in terms of dollar amounts that, you know, I've said this before, but we're kind of putting the cart ahead of the horse with the limits we offer. And I think the best way for us to get to where we want to get from a volume standpoint and be able to take, you know, million-dollar limits on the NFL is to take on all comers and sharpen our line as much as we can. And so that's kind of makes up for me not sitting there being totally immersed in Twitter every day of the week, and, you know, I have meetings and I have to go do stuff, and our guys are so busy booking that if we can take on everybody's bets and get all their information and have the sharpest line in the world, it makes the decision making easy. When somebody comes in the day of the game and wants to bet $300,000 on a side, you know, if we've seen enough action, enough two-way on that game, we feel pretty good about it. If we hadn't taken these you know, if we hadn't taken these bets and we had incomplete information, we'd be like, who is this guy? Should we give him this? But, you know, it becomes almost a decision, you know, irrelevant of the guy and more about what we know about the game.
What's more important, taking 7% of a million or taking 3% of 10 million? Right? I mean, it's when it comes to handle and hold. That's a philosophical question for a lot of guys, you know? Some worry about the hold number, and then others look at the handle number. Where do you stand in this equation?
No, I mean, I totally agree with you. Like, you know, like you said, you know, 3% of the bigger number, you know, that makes sense is the way to go. Like, we're trying to win the most amount of money we can, so this is the model that works for us. The caveat that I will kind of bring up is, if you don't have extremely skilled bookmakers booking these games, you can't really run the model we're running. And so, you know, more than anything, I've just gotten lucky. I've gotten guys like, you know, Chris Bennett, guys like Jeff Davis, guys like Matt Lindemann, who now works for WinBet, guys like Glenn Herzog. I mean, these guys are the best bookmakers in the world. And you couldn't just throw anybody in these rooms and say, hey, we're going to take 50K on a college side, you know, have fun. Because, you know, especially with the software we have, there was limitations to it, and we're exposing ourselves every time we put the app limit to 50,000. Like, it's, you have to know what you're doing. And so, you know, it's not easy to run this model, but I think if you have the capable guys in the back running it, then I think it's a superior model every day.
You've got to delegate. I mean, I think that's what you've learned over the last 3 years. I'm not going to speak for you, but it sounds like, you know, if you come in here guns blazing and try and run everything, you run nothing.
Oh, 100%.
You have to delegate, and your team is strong, but it's, again, back to that word, it's centralized. You got a guy for this, a guy for that, a guy for that. You've delegated.
Yeah, and these guys are better. They're better than me. Like, these guys have more experience booking than me. Like, you know, I only really booked for at a high level from like 2008 to 2010, because it took me 4 or 5 years to figure out, you know, what the hell I was doing. So I quit in 2010 at the Westgate. I bet for 8 years, and I had so many ideas of like, Bookmaking is like my first love, my true passion. Like, betting, I don't care about betting. I love bookmaking. So I had all these ideas, and I really knew how I wanted to do it. But then I got back here in 2018. We opened in 2019, and I need guys who are like, can execute this and who have been booking for the past 5 years and are sharp. And I'm, you know, it took me a year working here from 2019 to 2020 till I was kind of like back in the saddle. Like, I didn't know the system. I was slow. I'd get so frustrated because I'd be here and I'm like, God, I'm slow. I'm so slow. Like, I can't even book this stuff. I'm so slow. But I think I've gotten up to speed a little, but these other guys are still, you know, night and day better than me.
So. Oh, and I wind up Bennett and just let him go. You know, and I call him for a story about baseball, you know, and I try not to bother you guys, but it's finding who to talk to. And if I need something baseball and it's, you know, number centric or ratings, I call Chris Bennett, and man, like, you should see the stuff I don't put in these columns, you know, because he's just a savant. I think that's how I would describe him. He's a savant for baseball.
Yeah, and he's somebody who, you know, again, I consider one of the best bookmakers in the world. And when you combine that knowledge that he's had, because he bet professionally for 2 or 3 years as his, you know, only source of income, combine that with the, you know, the 10 years of booking experience at a high level, and then the past 2 years, especially at Circa, I mean, that's like, I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm drinking my own Kool-Aid too much or propping Circa up too much, but booking for 2 years at Circa, to me, is like masterclass in bookmaking. I mean, I think if you ask these guys, how much better are they than when they started here 2 years ago, they would all just be like, oh, I'm in such a better place, or so much more skilled than I was when I started here. So it's just a different environment.
Well, and then Derek comes in and says, all right, we're going to give away $10 million in the contest this year.
Yeah. I don't put that on Chris or Jeff or anything like that. Yeah. Worry about the games.
Yeah, I know. But like, Derek's the type of guy where he's not going to call you and like ask you, you know, he's just going to say, all right, we're going to give away $10 million now this year.
Yeah. And you know, we had a meeting about this, and I think every year is the same meeting. It's always Derek saying, here's the number. And then it's like me, Mike Palm, Jeff Benson, all being like, that's a big number. And we're all like, yeah. none of us want to go on record as saying like, yeah, we'll get there. And he always wants to push it forward. And so, to his credit, you know, he's gotten there every year.
He's gambling, Matt. He's gambling. 100%. That's a gamble.
This is the year he's really going to have to sweat that survivor. So this will be interesting. So. No, he is a gambler. You hit the nail on the head.
He's literally gambling. Yes, he has no idea if he's going to get there, but he's going to fucking find out.
Yeah, you can't like, if you're a gambler and somebody likes Las Vegas, you have to love Derek Stevens. He's like the epitome of the Las Vegas gambler, casino owner. Like, there is no better character than Derek Stevens.
I'll tell you a quick story about the first time I hung out with Derek. I was working at VSiN, and he came over. This was the year, it was 2018, and he bet like $10,000 on every basketball game, right, in the first round, which is nuts. He's like, we're having a party tonight at the D. Oh, cool. And he's like, yeah, here's my cell. Come on by. It's the game that Michigan is playing. I think it's Houston. And he's got God knows how much money on Michigan. He had them at 40-1 to win the national championship. Mm-hmm. They're down two with like 4 seconds to go. And that's the Jordan Poole three.
Yeah.
I'm standing right next to him. He's ripping heaters because he's got Michigan. The whole place has Michigan. And he goes, well, we're going to the long bar. The play unfolds. I'm watching him watch the game. And Poole hits the three. He puts his arm around me and goes, we're going to the long bar. It was such a monumental shift. And then that night, like, oh, my God, you thought I was with Michael Jordan all
right. Right.
It was insane. He's one of us.
He loves to sweat more than anybody I've ever met. And I hate to sweat to the point where, like, you're hard-pressed to get me to watch games because I just, like, can't take it anymore. You know, we'll book a game, and I'm like, we book that game as well as we possibly can. Like, hopefully we win. And then okay. I'll check back at the end and, like, you know, I try to watch, you know, if I'm making numbers on something like college football, college basketball, I'm trying to watch some because I want to, you know, it helps my number, but you know, I don't like watching games. It doesn't make me feel good anymore. I don't want to sweat. But Derek is just a true gambler, loves the sweat, and he takes the losses as good as he takes the wins. He's just, to him, like, he's kind of the epitome of that guy who can, you know, lose $1 million and be like, eh, that sucks, and then walk away.
Yeah, he's not erratic about it. Right. It's just I think he loves the chase more than actually catching the rabbit.
Yeah, which I think most gamblers can resonate with. Yeah, I agree.
I don't want to ask you to handicap anything. I don't want you to, you know, I'm not going to sit here and go, hey, what do you like in week one? But I'm curious about just the college football market in general.
Mm-hmm.
Write the college football sleepers column. I don't want to. It's Alabama. It's Clemson. It's Ohio State. I still don't. Oklahoma. And then we get down to Georgia. Eh. The rich just keep getting richer in that sport. And now with all this new stuff, the NIL stuff, the rich are only going to get richer, right? I mean, are there any teams down the board that can outlast the big boys?
No, I mean, when we're talking about sleepers, we end up talking about teams like Texas A&M who are like, they're like stocked blue blood programs. Like, I mean, there's no true sleepers. I mean, University of Florida is a sleeper. Like, I mean, you know, there's no true sleepers anymore. I've had a lot of people talk about Cincinnati who, you know, I think I mentioned this on another show. I'd have them 18-point dogs to Bama. So it's like,
exactly.
How much of a sleeper is that?
Yeah, like, but it's like, oh, hey, Sam, who do you like? Do the three sleepers in college football to win the title. I don't want to.
We actually put up our college football numbers really late. We put them up last week. And I know a lot of places put them up like 2 months out. And we did it last summer before all the games got canceled. We put them up like 2 months out. And I kind of got to the point where I'm just like, we don't write a lot of action on these things till the week of the game. And I know I probably pissed some people off, but, you know, I just didn't see the point in hanging them and not taking any bets. And to me, it's just kind of like eating up board space. Like, the thing that we've really started doing at Circa that I like is we really want to book these things for high limits at a high level, you know, when people want to bet them. So, you know, that was kind of our thinking with kind of delaying that. And we've had them up for a week now, and the action's very minimal. Like, I'm not seeing a ton of action. We're taking 20K on a couple games. Like, I think we're taking 20K in the Illinois-Nebraska game. That's, like, one of the first games this weekend.
The first game, I think.
Yeah, and that game, like, to me, you know, it's all about kind of actions really dictating our limits. So we saw some action at -6 and -6.5 on Nebraska, had some buyback at +7 on Illinois. And to me, like, once I see that two-way, we kick the limit up there. So, you know, to me, that's – I like to see that. That's fun to me. Like, once I see a game where there's two-sided action, I can bump the limit.
That's okay, interesting that you say that. Now. So that's when you kick your limits up.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You start seeing it go back and forth.
Yeah, I think I opened that game at, like, 5K. And then once you took the 6 bet, I was like, okay, the market's like 6.5, 7, bumped to 10K. And then we took a bet and got to 7, I think. And then once we saw that buyback, I was like, okay, this number's solid. Now we can take some bets. So that's kind of what we're modeling ourselves kind of like off the old Pinnacle approach, like way back in the days when they'd kind of like ramp up their limits as they kind of
sure.
Felt good about the number. So that's kind of what we're doing.
You see it from respected players then on both sides, and that's when you move it up.
Yeah, and it's just been – it's disappointing a little because we really haven't seen a ton of non kind of – arbitrage play so far. And so I'm really, if you watch our college board, I'm all over the place. Like, I think on Arkansas, like, versus Rice, I think I opened 20, maybe the market was like 22, and then I'm like, there's no action at 20, so I'm going to 19. Next day, no action, 18. Like, I'm looking to write bets. I want to see anybody's opinion. Like, show me an opinion. Like, give me something. Like, I don't want to just sit a game up there for a month and not take a bet. So I don't really care. I'll go, you know, I'll go 4 points off a game. Like, I think I had 11 on Ole Miss versus Louisville, and there was nothing at 11, and I'm like, all right, let's try 8. And so I jumped down to 8, and now we're on the other side of it, and like just looking for bets, like trying to find something that we can do to give us an excuse to raise the limit or give us an excuse to like have an opinion on the game.
This is fascinating stuff, man. I really appreciate you sitting down. Matt Metcalf, Circus Sports, Sportsbook Director. You guys are expanding too. You guys are growing. You're going in the different states, and it sounds like you made the right decision 3 years ago, man.
I appreciate that. Yeah, no, thank you for having me. I know I probably – drew this out longer than I needed to. I think
you've been punting on this for like a year ago. Well, then I finally secured you, and you're like, all right, you got me. Like, just back off. You got me. Now I'm going to opt out.
You kept making the ask after I said yes, which is like, when somebody says yes, just like, shut up.
I wasn't sure if it was a real yes. I had no idea. Now I know that you're a man of your word. I appreciate that. Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
That about does it for Chicken Dinner. Thanks to Matt Metcalf from Circa for hopping on the show. Our record, 159, 152, and 5, and we are up 0.1 units. That's not a lot, but hey, still up just a little bit in the black. We've got Nebraska, Illinois under 55. College football Saturday. Mark it down a little bit. I'm a little bit nervous because it is week zero, and anything could happen. I also went back and saw the last three meetings between the Huskers and the Illini. If you went on these numbers, you probably wouldn't take the under. 64, 80, and 89. Well, why is this number 56 on the open and 54 in the market? Somebody knows something, and I'm going to go with that somebody. Coming up on Chicken Dinner next week, we will talk to Dwayne Colucci from the Rampart, Jay Cornegate from the Westgate, and in 2 weeks, it's Chris Andrews from the South Point, Robert Walker from U.S. Bookmaking. Cash up tickets, make some money. We'll talk to you next time right here on Chicken Dinner.